When Srila Prabhupada was a small boy, raised in a Vaishnava family, he saw his father worshipping a deity in the home. Govinda, Radha Govinda was the family deity. And in a natural way, as a child is growing in a family, what to speak of one who by birth is from some previous life of some special qualification. Prabhupada was very attracted to worshipping a deity, and he asked his father for permission to worship a deity form. So his father was very happy, and his father provided some deity for him to worship, and Prabhupada later referred to those deities as dolls. Dolls in the sense not like we have in the West. Some piece of cloth with some stuffing inside and a doll. Sometimes they have Jagannath dolls and like that. But actually a deity, but Prabhupada's referring to the worship of the deity that he did as a small boy as worshipping dolls. In the sense that he was practicing. And in one stage or another, we're all practicing. According to the association that we have received, according to the convictions that we carry, and so many other spiritualizing factors in our lives, we're all practicing something. And the stage of initiation is to move from the practicing stage to a solid commitment stage. I was once attending a lecture Srila Prabhupada was giving in an assembly, about the same number of people as are here, young Western followers. And Prabhupada was saying, he's describing initiation this way, that anyone can take up the practice, chanting and studying Bhagavad Gita and following the activities of devotional service. And there's no loss. He looked around the room and basically acknowledged some of you are, he didn't say it exactly this way, some of you are here today and you won't be here tomorrow. Basically it was no loss. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even the sva alpa, even a small amount of practice of bhakti is a permanent asset. Trayate mahato bhayat. It delivers one from the Mahabhaya, the greatest fear. The greatest fear is what Prabhupada said was seeing the Yamadutas. They're very fearful looking. It was his language. And it means seeing the Yamadutas, not only, yikes, look at those creatures, but it's they're taking you to the court of Yamaraj for a determination of which of the lower hellish planets you'll go to from your sinful activities. That's also fearful. If you're not really clear about what that means, read the last part of Canto 5, Srimad Bhagavatam, and see if you find it an inviting destination. Very fearful. And even a slight amount of devotional service will save one from that destination. That is to say, guaranteed, one will get at least human birth in their next life. Even a little. So many people are doing many bad things, and some of those people, they get the opportunity to do some devotional service. Even unknowingly. I heard a lot about the Rath Yatra festival. especially I heard from the youth, they were like really fired up. Really fantastic event, and many persons participated and saw, as you read in Nectar Devotion, just seeing the cart of Lord Jagannath pass, and someone who stands and appreciates, that person becomes qualified, at least the potency is there, to manifest a four-arm Vaikuntha form. Just seeing Lord Jagannath and appreciating. Unfortunately, people may appreciate and then back again to two arms or four legs. Animal-like activity. But for that, the potency of the devotional service and extending that opportunity of devotional service to others is very, very powerful. Then Prabhupada would say, but initiation is for those who are serious. He wasn't dismissing those that weren't serious. He was honoring those that are serious. And the standard at that time was very mild. But initiation is for persons who, over a period of time, they, like all the rest of us, they meet challenges and opportunities and see those challenges or those opportunities as not obstacles or facilities for enjoyment, but just opportunities for service, and continue on with commitment to the practices of sadhana bhakti, using again this reference of Prabhupada worshipping dolls, continuing to perform the practices that, according to what one hears and faith in what one hears, they bring purification. Chitta dharpana marjanam, that the heart becomes cleansed. The mirror of the mind becomes cleansed. And all the other wonderful things. Bhava maha davagni nirvapanam. The blazing fire material existence becomes extinguished. Shreya kairava chandrika vitaranam. The white lotus of good fortune becomes manifest in one's life. And so forth. The practices of sadhana bhakti bring all this descending mercy into one's life. And there are obstacles in difficult times and circumstances. Some circumstances come and go, and some circumstances don't seem to go. They continue. But despite all those things, this initiation is for those who are very, as Prabhupada was explaining, very serious, to continue throughout this lifetime in pursuing the goal. What's the goal? For a life of a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the goal is to be eternally engaged in Krishna's loving service simply for his pleasure. To come to that stage, aspiring to come to that stage. On the occasion of initiation, practically every initiation, I say this particular part every time, because my experience was whenever Prabhupada performed initiations that I took part in, he always spoke on, included making reference to two particular verses, minimal. And I, through studies, later found out why. There are verses that our acharyas quote, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in relation to Rupa Goswami's teachings, he quotes them in relation to this stage of initiation. The necessity, when one has a desire for the ultimate benefit of life, then there's necessity to take shelter of a spiritual master. Jigyasu Shreya Uttama. Jigyasu means the spirit of inquisitiveness. Shreya Uttama, in the ultimate benefit of the living entity. Tasmat Guru Prapadyeta Jigyasu Shreya Uttama. If one is interested in temporary benefit, if one is interested in material improvement, then the spiritual practice and initiation in spiritual practice is not necessary. The Vedas are compared to a desire tree. Confirmed. A desire tree. Kalpa Vriksha. A tree that fulfills desires. And in the human form of life, there are bodies, and with bodies there's needs. Hunger and rest and family and so many things. So the Vedas give prescriptions of how to achieve those things in the most auspicious of ways. But Tasmat Guru Prapadyeta Jigyasu Shreya Uttama. Uttama means topmost, and Shreya means long-term benefit. Shreya Uttama. What's the destination of the soul? Just very quickly, the largest portion of the Vedas, this desire tree, deals with rituals, karmakanda rituals, whereby someone has a particular sankalpa, an intention, a desire for something, and there are procedures for fulfilling that desire. The bhokta of the yajna, Lord Vishnu, he's invoked at the very beginning. And then various devas are named as the persons who are being approached. There's priests specifically, kind of like an MC of the ceremony. His job is to invoke or invite the various devas, and Ganesh is invoked so he can remove obstacles. The statement, the declaration of the purpose of the yajna, so it's very clear, we want this. And then various mantras to create auspiciousness and offerings and so on. So, all of those things, those karmakanda rituals, there's elevating features to them. The elevating features include, one requires a qualified priest. You can't do a Vedic ritual without a qualified priest. So that means contact with someone, at least in principle, who's supposed to be in the quality of goodness and knowledgeable in the Vedas. And then there another is recognition of a higher authority to propitiate in order to receive that which one desires. Rather than unregulated, there's regulated. And submitting oneself to that regulation, it serves to elevate. And gradually, the whole of the Vedic process is to elevate the soul in this life with the understanding that gradually benefit will come also in the next life. And then a little light goes on that says, well, wait a minute. If there's benefit in the next life, it's not this body. What is it that's benefiting in the next life? It's the soul. So not just betterment of the needs of the body and mind, but the well-being of the soul, which leads then to another section of the Vedas. The Jnana Kanda section of the Vedas, specifically the Upanishads. And within the Upanishads, greater clarity about the soul and where this position of Brahman, the realm of the absolute realm that one should aspire for, not just improvement in this life and then in the next life in a higher position of enjoyment, but the transcendental realm, the realm of Brahman. And as one continues to pursue in that realm of Brahman, another little light may go on. And that is, what is this realm of Brahman anyway? And I hear of these terms of Bhagavan and Paramatma. What are these terms, Bhagavan and Paramatma, anyway? gradually one may come to understand, especially, or not especially, an essential element in going to the stage of devotional service or bhakti is association with a devotee of the Lord who carries bhakti within their heart and transmits that bhakti. And that person who gives that gift or gives the makes the connection with Krishna, that's the line of spiritual masters, the parampara, as we know from Bhagavad Gita. This term parampara is there, where Krishna speaks of millions of years ago. He transmitted the same knowledge that he was giving to Arjuna to the sun god Vivaswan. And Vivaswan gave it to his son, Vaivasvata Manu. And Manu gave it to his son, Ikshvaku. And in this way, the knowledge was passed by parampara, by disciplic succession. By that method of disciplic succession, the same thing that Krishna gave to Vivaswan, or that Krishna gave to Arjuna, or in our disciplic succession, that Krishna gave to Lord Brahma, who gave to Narada, who gave to Vyasa, who gave to Madhvacharya, and on down the line of disciplic succession, that very same potency is available. It can be accessed. And initiation is a formalization of that connection. Prabhupada would sometimes give this example. It's a really good example. Somewhere, I've not seen it, but I'm sure there is a big power plant in St. Louis. Con Edison? Okay. Some big power plant. And over here, there's an electric outlet. You stick your fingers in this electric outlet, and you get a shock that connects you with that power plant. Although we're very remote. As far as I know, the temple's been paying its electric bill, and so electricity is still being delivered. Although it's very remote. But this connects you with that. There may be many wires lying around somewhere in the building or in a construction site or something like that, and they don't deliver electricity unless they're connected to the outlet that connected to the powerhouse. Similarly, there may be many teachers with teachings and so forth, but this connection with the disciplic succession is necessary. I'll say it again. Connection with the disciplic succession is necessary. It's an essential step, the formalization of connection with disciplic succession, because before it's practice, and anyone can practice. Anyone's eligible to practice. Anyone can chant Krishna's name. Anyone can take prasadam. Anyone could dance an arti and read Bhagavad Gita and engage in the activities of devotional service. And through that, those activities, purification, elevation of consciousness. Then this submission unto the line of disciplic succession, that's also something that needs to be practiced and cultivated and similarly on the other side examined. And when a certain stage is reached, tasmat guru papadyeta jigyasu shreya uttama shabde pare chanishnatam brahmani upashramashrayam. The stage comes when one may accept shelter and be accepted, being given shelter through that line of disciplic succession, where there's certain qualifications of those who connect us in disciplic succession besides their following in disciplic succession. Shabde pare. The person is situated in transcendental knowledge. Shabde pare. Chanishnatam. And through that knowledge, they're able to dispel doubts of others who are not so acquainted with transcendental knowledge. Shabde pare. Chanishnatam. Brahmani upashramashrayam. That's a nice word. Upashama shayam. Those things that are of incidental and temporary nature, they're cast away. They're dismissed at some distance. That's some indication, according to this verse from the Upanishads, of the qualification of where one may seek shelter. Tasmat guru prapadyeta jijgashu shreya uchama. That's this nice verse. Tadvijanartam sagurum eva abhigachet samatpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Another very nice verse. If one wants to know, so not by fashion or convenience, but one wants to know this ultimate destination or higher purpose of life. I keep repeating this. It comes to mind again and again. I'm speaking about the inquisitive spirit, sharing this experience I had in when I was in China in the month of July. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I just had a discussion with a millionaire Buddhist for 2 hours. You know, and I was trying to understand, you know, what their place was in their spiritual trajectory, and what it was that they wanted, what was their value, what was not negotiable for them, what was negotiable maybe. No sense of taking shelter, sense of wanting. So you know, I was anyway, rather than just review. It was a nice discussion. They wanted wisdom so that they could be more successful in what they do, so that they could be more effective or be engaged in more charity work. Compassion and charity was their thing. Which is, you know, from the Vedic perspective, that's a good mentality for a Vaishya. Make money and use it in good work. Ultimately, good work means God's work. But, awakening a sense of gratitude for what they did have was and where did that come from? Because, anyway, they didn't want to go there. So that's not... It's something. Something. In the direction of goodness, but it's not a connection with transcendence. It's not a connection with the lotus feet of Krishna, in engaging in his loving service. So, by good fortune, one may come in contact with someone who understands that, to whatever degree they understand that, and then they can share that. When one wants that destination, then taking shelter of a spiritual master is imperative. It may take a while to get to the clarity that that's actually what life's goal is. In the beginning, just a comment from 45 years of experience in devotional service, in the beginning, most people don't have a clear idea of what that is. They have some idea, but as one matures in devotional service, the idea becomes much more clear. But even when there's this commitment, where there's, more clarity coming soon, then one may make this commitment of initiation. Sagaram eva abhigacchet. Samadpani literally means with wood in hand. Just as Sudama and Krishna were sent by Sandipani Muni to go gather firewood, because they had humble service for the spiritual master. Meaning, although Krishna was the son of a king, and Sudama was son of a Brahmin, the most elevated positions within Vedic culture, but they were given samadpani service. Go gather menial, making oneself, taking a humble position of service. That's all. And that's the mood that one should have in relation to the approaching spiritual master. Samadpani, shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Shrotriyam, this is the qualification of the spiritual master. The disciple must be qualified, the spiritual master must be qualified. So it's in kind of like a code. Shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Brahmanishtam, completely fixed, having taken full shelter in transcendental knowledge and a life of transcendental existence, heard directly from the Vedas. Shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Then this is a good combination for a successful submission, so that the initiation means submission to the spiritual master, which means submission to the line of spiritual masters coming from Krishna. And similarly, the acceptance is from the spiritual master, which indicates acceptance by the entire line of our disciplic succession. If you think about what that means, that's pretty awesome. Our line of disciplic succession is awesome. And they're accepting you. I understand that the venue for this initiation was, the preference was rather this, that, the other thing was right here in St. Louis. And I can appreciate just being here. It's like family. I mean, specifically, mother and father are here. But, you know, beyond mother, biological mother and father are here with you to, you know, observe and participate and give their blessings in this event of your initiation. This community in St. Louis is very much like a family. And, you know, you're all growing together, and as family members will sometimes have. I was with a family in Chicago. Won't tell you which family. And they were laughing about the issues they have in their family. They weren't getting specific, but, you know, they were emphasizing tolerance. One is teaching a Bhagavad Gita class, and he really likes the part in Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada is speaking in those verses from chapter 13, 8 through 12, items of knowledge, and one of them is tolerance. And he was saying, Prabhupada, I like this phrase, I'm meditating on it a lot, one has to become practiced, something, practiced at tolerating difficult circumstances. And I thought he was speaking about work, but then, you know, they were a little more specific, it was in the home. And then, you know, the child in the family said something, and then the mother in the family said something, and their eyes got big. And in families, loving, this is a very loving family, by the way. Very, I mean, remarkably loving family. And they have things that they need to work out. It's a teenager in the family, by the way. So, you know, I'm practicing. So this is a wonderful family, spiritual family. And I think the setting is very nice. That you've watched Venkat and Hema through the course of so many, especially those of you who've been involved in the community for some years, dealing with their own situation and, you know, their family situation with their daughter and this and that, and not easy. And relying on Krishna to find what is the best thing they can do as parents. Radhanath Maharaj was sharing with me a very interesting story. There was a family in Bombay, like there's so many families in Bombay. They had one daughter, and the parents were thinking, wouldn't it be nice if our daughter had a sibling? And so they asked their daughter, would you like to have a sibling to be with? And the daughter said, yes, yes. And so a child was conceived, and the child that was born was, I don't know what the particular malady was, the disease that was there with the child, but the disease was the child was unable to function on their own for their whole life. So they didn't become sad, oh, now we can't, you know, it was Krishna's giving us this opportunity to serve a living entity that will not grow up in one day be on their own. For their whole life, they'll be in our care. So we're getting a nice opportunity to render service. And, you know, the community members are also helping. It's nothing like this being under the same roof and taking this responsibility. So, I mean, publicly, Hema, congratulations for, you know, your motherhood and caring for your daughter so carefully. I hear mostly from your husband about trying this and trying that and maybe. Anyway, that's part of the service that Krishna has given you. A big part of the service that Krishna has given you. And it's likely to continue for quite some time. So then, you know, the community here accepts that circumstance and understands your commitment and your wishes to help. Anyway, I appreciate the family mood here in this room and in the community in general, and you know that Lal Gopal in particular has been especially instrumental in helping that happen. But one person can't make a family happen. It takes the community to make the family mood happen. So my compliments to all of you for the efforts that you have over the years put together to make such a nice community to help both of you grow in your Krishna consciousness. And from time to time, Nityananda Pran moseys on down to St. Louis and spends time with y'all and extends support even when he's remote, and then that's part of the family. I'm part of the family too. Fit in there somewhere. Happy to be part of this nice spiritual family. And our founder Acharya is at the head of the family. And for generations to come. Same. And who knows over the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years what the family is going to look like. But the as those of you that attended the program yesterday evening, you know about this unity in diversity principle that we discussed. And very, very important is understanding in all of your lives, say specifically for both Hema and Venkat, the role of Srila Prabhupada, but for all of us. We have different spiritual masters and different services that we like and different circumstances in our lives and different occupations and different parts of the world that we come from. A lot of people from India, but even from India, there's different parts of India. And I have noticed that different parts of India have their preferences as opposed to other people have their preferences. But the unity is Krishna consciousness. And the Krishna consciousness for us comes primarily through our founder Acharya. Anything that any of our present spiritual masters are providing, teachings wise or shelter wise or practice wise, Srila Prabhupada is our frame of reference. I'll just give one example because it came up this morning. The use of tulsi. We certainly, when we make offerings to the deity, Prabhupada's teaching is that each preparation should have a tulsi leaf. Now, you're very fortunate here because Divyananda is one of the best tulsi pujaris in ISKCON. So you have plenty of tulsi leaves. But one devotee was uncertain about whether they could take tulsi as part of some medicine. So, making a long story short, research was done, references were there, where Prabhupada made specific statements about tulsi in medicine, and some things that he didn't want tulsi to be used for, which was tea. Boiling tulsi was a no-no. And one of the main reasons that Prabhupada said, although there's medicinal effect in tulsi tea, he didn't like the idea, one, boiling tulsi, two, it could easily lead people into a previous habit. You all know what that habit is. Those of you from India know what that habit is, anyway. And that India habit didn't come from India, it came from England. I learned this. You may already know it. But the British, to get people hooked, they would pass out free tea in the parks. And people would get addicted to tea, and then they would sell it. Anyway, the frame of reference was Prabhupada had different conversations and different statements, and he himself took some medicines. He had a cough, and he requested gather this and that for cough, and then this other preparation for cough that had tulsi in it. He was indicating what he wanted. It was very clear what he wanted. So the frame of reference is Srila Prabhupada. That determines what we do and what we won't do. And, you know, and similarly the teachings of devotion. How we'll exhibit and practice our teachings of devotion according to the indication of our founder Acharya. So, he's the head of the family for generations. For many, many generations within ISKCON. And we're deeply indebted to him. And we offer our submission unto him in particular during this initiation ceremony. It's a beginning. Initiation is the translation of the word diksha. Harinam diksha is this ceremony. And initiation means a beginning. So practice is a beginning, and then initiation is another beginning. Beginning of firm commitment and upholding of vows and continuing to progress on the path of devotion to Krishna, specifically carefully guarding against the 10 offenses. So I think I've spoken enough. We could go through the 10 offenses, but I'll not do that.